And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state, the most beautiful state in the nation, this one, Alabama. Goes way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. A few more text messages and I'll jump right in. This first topic is going to be interesting. I think you're going to like it. I'm calling it Passing on the Problem, and I'll tell you why momentarily. Wiley from Gunnersville says horizontal is okay.
He's
basically thinking the word salad from Kamala is because she did drugs in the 80s. I don't know that for a fact, Wiley, but send me a text I can actually read online, brother. Donna from Hartsell says, she says, who doesn't love a yellow school bus? You forgot that one. I did forget that one. Thank you very much. Or how about we all live in a yellow submarine? There's another good one. TL from Huntsville says, Phil, that was a humorous monologue with a serious point. Proverbs 9:10 says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. The knowledge of the Holy One is insight. Everything else is just word salad. Thank you, TL. Awesome. JT Lacey Springs says, word salad. Initially, I would have said, Kareem Jean-Pierre removes doubt as to songs. They're coming to take me away fits. Oh, yeah, they're coming to take me away. Dr. Demento kicking that one in. Jeremy from Madison says, great monologue. And then he gives me, ting tang, walla walla bing bang. Yes, you're right. The Purple Peter leader has definitely got it going on. Bruce from Hazel Green says, Miss Harris needs to get back on that short yellow bus she keeps talking about. Okay. Morgan from Fort Myers says, great monologue. Kamala's word salad drives me nuts, but I love Blinded by the Light, so I'll have to play that later to get it unstuck from my head. Thank you very much, sir. You're welcome. But you ever had a song, I mean, I know you have. What am I talking about? You're a music guy. A song gets stuck in your head and won't go away? It's like a brain worm.
Yeah, that works, though, listening to the song.
Actually takes it away?
Yeah. Well, it makes it worse for the first maybe 10, 15 minutes, but then it'll go away.
Really?
Yeah. At least that's how it is for me in my brain.
You're just making crap up now.
No.
Really?
For me, that's how it is.
Well, that would have helped me. I remember one time I got a Beatles song stuck in my head at Ranger School where I was not sleeping for like 2.5 days straight. And so the song literally, and I only knew part of it.
Yeah.
So then I'm singing part of it over and over and over again. That's just... yeah, that was not good for my mental health. Bruce from Springville says, the ultimate problem Harris has is no leadership. You and I have been military. We know she cannot communicate because she can't be basic and deliberate in her words in order to get the job done. That's right. And she does not exhibit a command presence when she does either. Finishing up here, John from Huntsville says, Phil, awesome monologue. Also, did you hear? Over 24 million people listen to Trump's. I thought it was 80 million. Maybe it's 24 million. Okay, I'll take your word for it. Listen to Trump's interview with Elon Musk on X. By the way, Phil, can you tell me where this song line comes from? Who lives in a pineapple under the sea? I don't know, but now I'll be Googling it because Google knows all.
You don't know that one?
Who lives in a pineapple under the sea?
SpongeBob SquarePants.
Oh, no. That's just wrong. Okay, that's because I don't watch SpongeBob SquarePants. Okay, Mike from Huntsville takes issue. Whoa, you're blasting Harris about word salad, he says. What a hypocrite. Your guy says word salad stuff all the time. I guess you've seen his rallies and whatever that was with Musk last night. I did. And I didn't get to see Musk, but I saw clips of it. Which part did you think was word salad, Mike? Oh, I don't know. Maybe the part that just had policy positions you don't agree with. Jeff from Indiana says, speaking of hit songs, you need to play the one for the show that my daughter wrote. Oh, yeah, we need to do that sometime. I forgot about that. Karen from Tony. I can't read the whole thing. It's a super long text. All right, you know what? I'm going to come back to it because she gave me the lyrics to to do looking out my back door. Yes, that is look at all the happy creatures dancing on the lawn. Bother me tomorrow. Today I'll buy no sorrows. Looking out my back door. Thank you, Credence. We appreciate you. All right, listen, let me jump on in here. Passing on the problem. I have a personal story that creates somewhat of a beef for me. When someone does a really poor job, they should not be passed to the next person to have to handle their problems. It should not be that way. Don't do that to someone. Now, I recognize there may be times when you don't want to say the mean thing, right? But you may be saving somebody else the 10 pounds of pain you already put up with by just simply doing your job. Don't pass on the problem to somebody else. I had a situation, and this is one of my downrange deployments. I had a guy on my team, didn't know him. He was assigned to me right as the deployment was about to start. We had the honeymoon phase, I guess, at Fort Bragg. Things are looking great. Seems like a super soldier. Get downrange, I'm beginning to notice a few things right as we're about to hit the tarmac and load up at the green ramp and head overseas. And this is just like, okay, starting to not add up. And next thing I know, I've got a guy who's downrange who's insubordinate, who is divisive, who is undermining my authority, and who is putting some things, in my opinion, at risk. In a war zone, I fired him. I found out later on I was about the third team in the last couple of years to get rid of the guy because he did the same thing everywhere. Came on like a super soldier until he realized that he thought he could do a better job, and he'd go ahead and just make sure everybody knew what would really happen if he was the one in charge. Listen, I'm going to tell you, there's no room for that in life in general, but there's certainly no room for that in a place where people are shooting at you on a regular basis. So yeah, I got rid of him. But the galling thing to me was not to find out that somebody was not going to be the stellar individual I thought they were. The galling thing to me was to find out that his record did not reflect any of it. And I don't mean you got to torpedo people. That's not what I'm saying. You can gracefully let someone go, and you can also give them constructive feedback in the process, and then you can decline to give them a stellar review as they leave, because well, all that happens in the next job interview is they read the review. And if you wrote a stellar review that did not match the reality of what you dealt with on the individual, then the next person gets to just figure it out. And the pain starts all over again. And all you've done is perpetuate the cycle. The lack of leadership at that point on your part is something that impacts the next person who then has to deal with it. So yeah, I fired that guy. And I made sure that his record reflected it. Once I did my part, I couldn't control whether or not he was able to get by with somebody else, but I was not going to let it be because I sat still and did nothing. And I don't mean that, like I said, that I torpedoed him, but I didn't give him what he wanted, I'll tell you that. Now, Kamala Harris has virtually no governance or leadership on her resume. She comes to us much like what we've seen in Joe Biden, with a background that says neat things and is a fairly big resume. But when you dig in, what you realize is there's no leadership there. There's no, I ran an organization. There's no, I led troops in battle. There's no, I cut a paycheck or balanced a budget. There's none of that. You don't see anybody making hard decisions. You don't see Kamala Harris out front with a policy position, with the exception of the last 4 years. Now, you can find things she did. You could say anecdotally, while she was an attorney general, she did or didn't do this. Or while she was a U.S. senator for hardly any time at all, she stood for or didn't stand for this. But when it comes to governance, when it comes to leadership, when it comes to the ability to actually make the rubber hit the road, because that's what the executive branch does. The executive branch is the one that makes the rubber hit the road. The executive branch is the one that actually enforces the law, not enacts the law. The executive branch is not the one who tries the cases per se. The executive branch is the one that brings the cases. And you got to look at her life and go, what do we have to go on? Not much. But Tim Walz, that's a different story. Tim Walz, we got stuff. Tim Walz, who she brought onto her team, Tim Walz has plenty. And I'll be honest with you, past is present, because we know what Tim Walz will do when he governs, because he's been governing at the state level as a governor for a while. Which I'll be honest, I think that the kind of resume that Tim Walz and Ron DeSantis both bring is one of the best ones you can bring. With the exception that I don't see any business sense. Tim Walz is coming to us with basically a record of when I'm in charge and when I'm the person who makes the rubber meet the road, there's things that I will do, and therefore we can only believe that given the opportunity, he'll come in and do it again at the higher level. Well, now Kamala, I'll touch on this and just say, to affirm my own comments, I guess. Daily Caller has a piece. And it's pretty interesting. It talks about the fact that Newsmax employees went to a recent Kamala Harris rally and began to query some of her fans and supporters as to what their favorite positions were that she had. Nobody knew. They would say things that were innocuous or somewhat generalized or, for that matter, just silly. They pointed out that Harris has yet to formally address the media to clarify her policy positions. Think about that. She's been the nominee now for close to a month, and she still has not clarified actual policy positions or put her plan up on the website. Not at all. Not even a sat down with the media once. Some Newsmax reporter went out and started confronting some of her supporters. They asked one guy who was wearing a COVID mask when he walked up. This is last week. Wearing his mask, what's the most important policy issue that she holds that's important to you? At which point he took off his mask, which I question, and said, I would say freedom. And later clarified, he says he was talking about pro-abortion stances because we're all born to mothers. Okay. One woman said she loved the fact that Harris was unifying the nation. I'm sorry, it's not a policy position, but thank you for coming. Another individual was asked about where she thought Harris stood on fracking. She said that she's used to support it, but she understands from being told now by the reporter that she doesn't support it, which caused her to basically say, and they don't know. Here's the thing. We're going to take a break here momentarily. When I get back from this break, let's set aside Kamala Harris's leadership. Let's assume for a minute that something awful were to happen and she got elected. That means that Tim Walz is standing in the wings. Tim Walz then being one heartbeat away, what do we know about his ability to put policy into action? Well, we got plenty. I'll tell you all about it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. I mean, making common sense like a superpower. Hey, so let's talk about this for a minute. So the title of this dipper is Passing On the Problem. That's basically what my reference there is, like my experience with the guy on my team in Baghdad that I had to fire in the war zone. By the way, that should be a career ender. Fired from your job in the war zone? That should be a career ender. It wasn't, but I did what I had to do, and I made sure that what I saw was documented. That being said, I found out that the problem had been passed on to me by other people who just didn't want to deal with it, and so they shucked it off onto other people. Duh, this is wrong, man. This is wrong. Well, take that into politics. When you can see what someone has done in the kind of role they're asking to do elsewhere, it is more than just a resume. It's like a clarion call to what it is you can expect them to do. So the truth be told, what we're looking at right now with Tim Walz is we know exactly what he'll do. He's going from an executive position where he's been the governor since 2019 in a major state, and he wants to come be the president to be an executive again, putting the rubber to the road at the national level. So let's take a few stories here and break down what we could expect. Where does he stand on the question of civil liberties? That's an important one. I will tell you right now, when it comes to public policy, here's a phrase. If you want to say something to catch people's attention as you're having those water cooler conversations, just look at them and say, when it comes to public policy, I always err on the side of liberty. There you have it. And what you just basically said was, very first thing we got to consider in anything that government does is how does it affect our civil liberties? Okay, that being said, where's Tim Walz? Story here on Fox News came out this morning. In fact, I just saw it a little while ago, and I asked Alicia to grab the story for me so I could get it on the air like right before the show started. Minnesota grandmother jailed for defying Walz's COVID lockdowns. Issues a warning to fellow Americans. That's what I'm talking about. She is not willing to pass on the problem. She thinks that other people need to know what exactly happened to her. Here's the deal. Her name's Lisa Hansen. I'm sure she's not the only one. But she owned a wine and coffee bistro. And during the COVID lockdowns, one of the most draconian states in the nation was Minnesota. Florida, by the way, open for business. Alabama, we reopened fairly quickly, got schools going again and everything. Minnesota, couldn't hang. Governor's like, keep it all locked down, until he began to selectively let some people have their lives back and others not so much. So Lisa Hansen says that she basically saw her business get shut down and destroyed, and her words to the nation are, you don't want tyranny at that level. She's a mother of eight. She's soon to have 18 grandchildren. Think about this. She's a mother of eight, soon to have 18 grandchildren, never had a criminal record, had a speeding ticket once as a teenager. She's always been a law-abiding citizen, she said. Her business is called the Interchange Wine and Coffee Bistro in a town called Albert Lea, about 90 miles south of Minneapolis. They've been open for 8 years. Then COVID happened. She initially complied with the shutdowns, like everybody else. No one knew what was going on. Everybody shut down. Everybody went home, watched, waited, see what's going on. And then she said she watched for months as Waltz never fully reopened the state. And then she began to realize it's only because she was declared non-essential, never mind the fact that the governor never shut down the big box stores and he let strip clubs reopen. But her little restaurant and gyms and dance studios stayed closed. In her words, she said he shut down a lot of the mom and pop shops. He allowed the big box stores, etc., to open. It was an incredible use of tyranny against the people. It gets worse. She didn't just lose her job. She lost her life, just about. Hansen says she eventually decided to reopen her business and defy Walt's renewed shutdown for order for bars and restaurants six times between December 2020 and January 2021. And she was convicted on misdemeanor charges and received the maximum sentence of 90 days in jail and a $1,000 fine. She actually spent 60 of those days in jail. A mother of eight, a businesswoman with no criminal record, was sent to jail by Tim Walz because she dared to open her business at a time when other businesses were already allowed to operate. That, listen, her words, this is a story that America needs to hear, that Tim Walz is not some cuddly, joyful coach like all the things the mainstream media is calling him. That is not who this man is. This man would take your rights away. He will take your rights away because what happened to me could have happened to anybody, and what happened to me will happen to you. So, point number one, in terms of don't pass it off to the other people, don't go passing on the problem. If you think for a second that your civil liberties are safe under a Biden-Waltz administration, think again. Because we may not have a track record of governance by Kamala Harris, but we can see who she picked to be her vice president, and we know what he'll do. And I'm assuming she researched his record, right? You'd think so. A little due diligence. What's he got? Took the press no time at all to figure it out. People thrown at grandmothers. A mother of eight, a grandmother of soon to be 18, thrown in jail for daring to say, you're crushing my business. I just want my life back. And she spent 2 months in jail. Paid a $1,000 fine. Civil liberties. I started with that one. We're going to go into some others. I've got stuff here on his economic policies. I've got stuff here about how he handles farms. I've got stuff about, does he stand with our allies? And listen, I've got stuff about the military service that we'll talk about briefly too. Bill Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national, sometimes the international. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, let's jump back on in here. Big Rig, I'm going to call for audio clip number one here momentarily. So I'm in dipper number one. I'm calling it passing on the problem. It's a heck of a thing when a really poor employee or a member of your unit is just a rag bag, just Doe Snuffy the rag bag, can't get anything done, messes things up everywhere they go, or for that matter, maybe it's intentional. They're not just not a hard charger. They're actually a bad employee. It's a heck of a thing when that gets passed on to the next people because no one wants to do anything about it at the level they're at now. What I'm glad to see is that the people of Minnesota are calling things out. Now, granted, I know he's got supporters. He got reelected. He does. He has supporters in Minnesota, so let's not pretend that he doesn't. But I'll say this. There are people in his state right now that are saying, y'all got to know who this guy is. And I'm talking about What kind of policies could we expect if he were to get to the executive branch, senior positions of president, vice president in the United States of America? We know what he'll do. Why do we know it? Because he's been doing it. When you're a governor, you are indeed the chief executive officer for an entire state. And we can look at the way you ran things there and imagine that you would probably bring that with you. A moment ago, we talked about where he is on civil liberties. How about this? What about law and order? Law and order. You know, there are a lot of people that point to the fact that the George Floyd riots began in his neck of the woods. The George Floyd riots burned down whole sections of Minneapolis-St. Paul. And it branched out from there and became a nationwide phenomenon. He, if you get down to it, he did not tamp down the massive civil unrest that occurred in his state, and as a result, it spread out and we saw it everywhere because it was allowed to fester, because it was allowed to grow on his watch, because he did nothing to stop it. And I thought to myself, maybe he's one of those guys that just goes into paralysis mode, which is not good, and doesn't know how to call things out and sort of take those hard-charging moments and get something done. No. How about we find out that what really happened was he chose to give away ground to the protesters? I've got an audio clip here from a member of the police union speaking to the Minnesota State Senate under oath, testifying like to the point that police were in tears as they were being told to stand down and not only let things burn, but to even let their own precinct be given away under the governor's orders. Play the audio.
Police officers testified at the Minnesota Senate today. The officers are all board members for the Minneapolis Police Federation. And as Esme Murphy reports, they offered up a scathing critique of government and police leaders during the riots following George Floyd's death.
That's not what we stand for.
Her voice shaking, Minneapolis Police Sergeant Anna Hedberg says during the riots, officers were abandoned by state, city, and department leaders.
To watch them go through that was so heartbreaking. To know that they could have died because we were not allowed to respond the way that we have been trained to respond.
During the riots, the officers were told they could not wear protective frog suits, but were still hit and injured with bottles, cement, and more. Sergeant Hedberg blamed state, city, and department leaders for the abandonment of the third precinct.
I heard the governor say, give it up. It wasn't directly to me, it was through a phone call. No, the governor says, give up the precinct. I mean, that's demoralizing for this whole state.
And the three described a demoralized police force with dozens of officers planning to retire or quit.
I believe I speak for every Minneapolis cop when I tell you that I've never been more publicly humiliated.
They also described a city out of control.
The crime is rampant in Minneapolis right now.
All right. What an amazing clip. I mean, think about what you just heard. So there's a moment in a trial as an attorney when I may have a witness on the stand and I'm trying to elicit a piece of testimony and the other side will object on the basis that it's hearsay. And that happens all the time. Objection, Your Honor, hearsay. Well, there are what's known as exceptions to hearsay. And one of those exceptions to hearsay is what the law calls a then present sense impression. What does that mean? It means, no, what you're hearing, Your Honor, is testimony about what they actually felt at the time of the events made the basis of this claim. A then-present sense impression is exactly what you just heard, because that testimony was contemporaneous with the smoldering effects of the riots in Minneapolis, as police officers were just devastated to find out that all the years of training and dedication they had to the job, the men and women in blue in Minneapolis were told to stand down. In fact, she testified that she personally heard the governor saying, what some might say was hearsay because he wasn't there. No, she was conveying a present sense impression. She knows she heard the governor say, give it up, give away the precinct. And their precinct burned. That's their fort. That's their castle. That's their house. That's the men and women in blue knowing they don't even have a place to go at this point. They're not only not able to respond effectively to the law and order needs of the people on the street and the businesses and the homes that were burning. Their own house burned because their governor said, give it up. Give up the precinct. Think about what that means. The gall of that. How any man should be allowed to stay in office after that. And that's testimony, by the way. That's not just like somebody, you know, I read this on social media. No, that was a chief member of the police union testifying before the Minnesota State Senate and telling them, I heard the governor say, give up the precinct. That's just maddening to me. Imagine what that means if he were in charge at the executive level in the United States. Keep in mind, the president of the United States, anything happens, the VP takes over. But also recognize that the current person who wants to be the Democrat nominee for president of the United States has chosen this man to be her partner. And that's a guy who jails grandmas for daring to open their business. Mother of 8 kids, 60 days in jail. Crushed her business. Same guy. Doesn't let law enforcement do their job. Literally orders the precinct to be given up to the rioters. By the way, you may recall that last week, his wife spoke in an interview, and during that time, it was very important to her to leave the windows open in the governor's mansion so that they could smell the tires burning, because in her words, that was a touchstone to the moment. A touchstone to the moment. As the first lady relishes the wafting breezes of smells of burning tires, knowing full well her husband has chosen to give up the precinct and all the other buildings and just let it burn. Because that's what you do when you're a liberal soft-on-crime Democrat. What's he going to do at the national level? More of the same. Don't pass this one on. People in Minnesota are telling us right now, be warned, this is what he'll do. All right, we're going to take a break right now. I'll come right back, and I'm going to dive a little deeper. I'm telling you, I wanted to unpack this. When I saw the level of content that I had, I thought, my gosh, I need time to just unpack this. Well, where does he stand on standing with our allies? Vice President of the United States? You might want to know. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. I mean, like, man, pulling all the pins on the truth grenades here today. So I'm gonna move through a little bit more of this stuff on passing on the problem. Listen, in case you hadn't noticed, this has got a burr under my saddle, man. I just despise the idea, because of my own experiences, I just despise the idea of someone being a really poor employee or a bad actor somewhere else. Nobody says nothing. They just let it go on to the next people to deal with it because they don't want to deal with it. Listen, 5 minutes of uncomfortable conversation will save you 5 hours of pain later. It just will. Take that as a word of experience. If you are willing to have the conversation that's uncomfortable right now, you may find that it saves you massive amounts of uncomfortable conversations later. It doesn't mean you got to be rude. Doesn't mean you got to be, you know, but you know what? To some degree, and I believe this to be true, the manner in which we treat people matters. It does. But letting someone become a problem is called enabling. And in the therapy world, enabling is a bad thing. When you're going through counseling, when you're talking, you know, about someone who has got issues or trying to work through, and they've got people who are enabling their life, that is the person who is basically, you're going to be okay. It's all right. You're fine just as you are. Don't worry. No one, it's going to be okay. Keep trying. And no, I'm not going to make you come in and do that thing. And I won't, you know, it's all right. You're enabling the bad behavior. The person who will look at them and go, listen, let's talk for a second. You got to change some things. And it may mean that you don't stay here if you can't. All right? There's nothing wrong with that. In fact, that's called good stewardship on your part. If you got a bad employee, if you got somebody who undermines authority, if you got somebody who ruins the group dynamic, if you got somebody who makes your life miserable because you spend the majority of your time tracking down the stuff they screwed up, then either A, you get rid of them, or B, you at least provide some corrective measures to help them become a better employee or person. There's a great quote. General Carl Steiner is one of the founders of Army Special Operations. It's one of my favorites. There's a piece in a book that talked about, the book's called Shadow Warriors. It's the history of the onset of U.S. Army Special Operations. And General Carl Steiner was there in the beginning. And he had a quote that I wrote down because of this very thing that I'm talking about. The quote said, "You should love your troops the same as you would want your son or daughter to be loved and cared for by any other commander. But if in combat you cannot trust them, you should get rid of them the soonest." What he's saying is, do what you can to keep everything in order, take care of the folks, but recognize that at some point, making the hard call may have to happen. That's called not passing on the problem. And Democrats right now are determined to take what all of us, all God's children, everybody, la-di-da-di, everybody can look at Minnesota right now and go, dang, we don't want to be like that. And don't get me wrong, there's some wonderful people in Minnesota. Play some good baseball in Minnesota. There's some great salt-of-the-earth farmland in Minnesota. But just like the state of New York, the conservatives are outweighed by the urban populist base that leans left and does crazy things. How would he do with standing with allies? Well, that's a big deal. Vice President of the United States of these Americas, that's right. He would be the guy who represents us very often. He would be someone whose stance on international issues related to our allies would matter. Issues of foreign policy would not necessarily be his by himself as vice president, but you can imagine that he would play a role. Congresswoman Elise Stefanik, story here on Daily Wire, came out yesterday. Elise Stefanik on Monday condemned her Democratic vice presidential nominee and Minnesota Governor Tim Walz for rubbing shoulders with the founder of a National Students for Justice in Palestine during a 2019 event. What we're learning is this. When you're a governor, let me back up. I spend enough time in the halls of government to know that a governor has staff, and a governor staff, their job is in part to not only do the governor's work and to help her or him get the job done, but also to defend the governor's interests in the public eye. If you know and sometimes things happen by accident. You show up at an event, you had no idea that thing was going to happen or that thing would be said, and there you are in the room and you're hoping nobody aligns you with it. Other times, though, it's not an accidental interaction. It just happened. Elise Stefanik points out, Tim Walz condones and props up anti-Semites. He was at an event where he spoke alongside anti-Semitic scholar and Students for Justice in Palestine founder Hatem Bazian during the Council on American-Islamic Relations March in 2019 called Challenging Islamophobia. By the way, CARE, Council on Islamic Relations, American-Islamic Relations, is a notoriously left-leaning pro-Hamas organization. Walz reportedly opened the CARE event and used his own remarks to announce the formation of an office to address Islamophobia in Minnesota. Wonderful. Glad he's doing it. I'm not for Islamophobia, but I'll be honest with you, standing next to people who are anti-Israel and pro-violence and support Hamas is not a good look. It gives me a question in my own mind as to what he would do in terms of our U.S. allies. It goes further. Just last week, it was revealed that he also hosted an extremist Islamist imam named Asad Zaman multiple times in his office. Now, people come to an office to meet with a governor. I get it. It's not always that the governor wants to meet with that person. But a governor's staff is allowed to say, no, the governor is not going to be available to meet with you. Multiple times, this guy named Zaman, who's the executive director at the Muslim American Society of Minnesota, met with the governor. This guy has a history of sharing Hamas press releases and anti-Semitic blogs on his social media, and he's linked to a website for a 2013 pro-Hitler film. So I have to question, in terms of passing on the problem, hey, Minnesota, let us know what you think. How would he be with our national allies? Well, what we can see right now is he already leans towards those who don't support our allies. That's a problem. We're going to come back from this break and I'll wrap this thing up, take some of your text messages and move on to the next dipper. But I got to talk to you about economic policy. And then, listen, we have a list of so-called policy positions that he has had as a member of the executive branch, the chief executive of the executive branch for the state of Minnesota. You can only imagine if he did these things at that level, that given the opportunity, he would do them at the national level. And that's the ticket they're running on right now. Y'all, this may be the most liberal progressive ticket ever to run for office in the United States. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one right here. I am talking about Alabama. Y'all, this show goes like way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. Hey, by the way, I need to pause momentarily from this dipper that we're in and just remind you guys that one of our latest sponsors is Inspire Advisors. So Inspire Advisors is very cool in what they do. They are experts in what is known as biblically responsible investing, or BRI. It's a thing. You may be shocked to find out that there's things that you are investing in for your future, and you have no idea that some of the companies you're investing in may support everything you don't stand for. Like, you know, companies you're investing in could support abortion or pornography or even human trafficking. It's pretty awful, and it also happens all the time. So, yeah, like I said, time for you to meet Paul Breyer and his team at Inspire Advisors, and they are so good at what they do, and they will sit down with you for free in person. Think about that, for free, in person, and give you a look at what's in your portfolio and even offer you some biblically aligned alternatives if you want. But there's no hook, there's no upsell, there's no fuss, no muss. It's free. If you want to know more about this, biblically responsible investing with Inspire Advisors, go to their website. That's www.moneypatternwealth.com. That's www.moneypatternwealth.com. Or you can go to our website, rightsidemedia.org. Click on the Right Side Radio Sponsors tab and go on their logo, takes you right to their website. Look, the bottom line is this: Inspire Advisors. It's conservative, it's godly, it's balanced, it's financial freedom, y'all. Check it out. Go get some of that free reporting on what you got. All right, let me jump back in here. We're going to take this thing to its conclusion. It's pretty bad. I wanted time to unpack this. The more I dug into what Kamala Harris has chosen as her running mate, not who, but what she has chosen as her running mate, the more alarming it is. There could not be a more polarizing pair of people. The left has really just won over the idea of taking everything to the next level. It is extremely concerning to think about the idea of what I'm about to cite to you getting all the way to the White House and having sway over our individual lives. I mean, it's like, for instance, I can just tell you right now, at a recent farm fest in Minnesota, rural Minnesotans were expressing their discontent of having to live in the state governed by Tim Walz, saying that basically we feel like we're in a mini California. That's their quote. One individual's quote says, "We joke that we're in a mini California. Most of us, if we could, we'd annex into South Dakota. He's put policies in place that have hurt small businesses. I have friends that have lost their businesses because of his policy. It's killing our towns, our rural development. Farmers are saying that he's done nothing to really help farms. In fact, he's hurt them because of all his environmentalism. It's a mess." But then what about his economic policy? Well, you have to look at what he says about himself. I mean, I've got an article here from Fox Business, Dateline last Friday. Former White House Council of Economic Advisors Chairman Kevin Hassett warns Minnesota's Governor Tim Walz has a disturbing approach to economic policy. He is absolutely a tax and spend liberal. In fact, he's an avowed socialist. Is that rhetoric? Well, I don't know. What does Tim Walz say about himself? Well, he recently spoke to a group of Democrats and said that, in his own words, socialism is just what some people call neighborliness. Oh, really? So he's a good neighbor because he gives away your money to buy things that your money was never intended to buy. The economic expert continued by saying that what we're looking at is the terrifying side of Waltz's socialist approach to policy. He said they put Joe Biden in the White House pretending he was a moderate. Then he kind of ran as if he's on Bernie, as if he was Bernie Sanders. But now they're actually running Bernie Sanders. It's truly disturbing. What kind of things would you expect to see? Policy positions, there's different kinds. There's cultural, sociocultural, you know, there's economic, there's energy policy, there's education policy, there's, okay, as the governor of a state, he not only has an agenda, but he signs legislation that he could choose to veto if he wanted to. And sometimes, and I've seen it, I've been a part of it, a governor will call for legislation and the executive branch and the legislative branch will work together on something, or the governor will float a bill that they want and they'll find an ally in the legislative process to carry the bill, and it gets massaged a bit and changed around, and then sometimes the governor can veto things. Happens all the time. That's part of the process, the checks and balances. So when a governor signs a piece of legislation, you can't hide behind the, well, the legislature passed it. No, because if the governor truly wanted to, he could veto it. In 2022, the Minneapolis Star Tribune wrote that Minnesota Democrats have rapidly advanced the most progressive agenda in a generation. Tim Walz signed into law a string of progressive bills across an entire array of policy issues, it says. NBC News called the state of Minnesota a laboratory on pushing progressive policy. Think about this. This is the guy who wants to be your vice president. All this article comes from Just the News. Just the News has this piece, came out August 9th. So this will be what, last, what, Wednesday, Thursday? Let's talk about some of them. How about his LGBTQ issues, his policies on LGBTQism? Walz signed legislation protecting access to so-called gender-affirming care. You know, that's where they non-affirm gender. And barring state officials from complying with any extraditions or child removals or subpoenas connected to the receipt of treatment within the state. They called it the Trans Refuge Bill. It's a bill to shield travelers to the state who arrive to receive treatment from any repercussions from their home states. That also includes kids. Kid runs away, comes to Minnesota, starts getting treatments. Next thing you know, the parents in the other state find out where they are and say, we want our child back. State of Minnesota has a trans refuge bill. You can't have your child back. I'm sorry. It doesn't work like that. Walz last year also signed the Take Pride Act, which removed exemptions for non-religious organizations on sex-based distinctions. What does that mean? That may mean that Christian schools would have to hire a guy to be in a position of coaching girls in the girls' locker room or whatever. How about abortion? How about abortion up until birth? In January 23, just last year, Walz signed legislation establishing a right to reproductive health care, except that what it really is a right to destroy reproductive health care, including abortion with essentially no restrictions. They call it the Protect Reproduction Options Act. Why do they always use the word reproduction when it's about stopping reproduction? Anyway, the Protect Reproduction Act says that every individual has a fundamental right in Minnesota to make autonomous decisions about their own health care, to include obtaining abortions. In other words, a right to an abortion now exists in the law of the state of Minnesota. Walz signed it. He also expanded it this year. In April of this year, he expanded it to be the Reproductive Freedom Defense Act. Oh, it wasn't enough. It's not enough to have a right to it. Now you're going to go ahead and make the state what they call an abortion sanctuary. You come there, you get an abortion, somebody back home says, That was my daughter. That was my baby. That should not have happened like that. And they're going to go, sorry, sanctuary. What about environmental policies? Transitioning the state to entirely clean energy by the year 2040. Look at that. He looks just like California. Republicans deemed it the blackout bill, contending it's going to increase the cost of basic utilities on Minnesota families. That's according to the Minnesota Reformer. A $2 billion spending package to give rebates for electric vehicles and rebates for turning in used ones and $1 million grants for solar panels, and then there's education. Keep in mind, the guy's a former teacher/teachers union guy. Education omnibus bill in 2023, just last year. Pray tell, what does it include? Is it about education? Well, it's also about tampons and boys' rooms. What? Yes. That's why they call him Tampon Tim. According to the includes a requirement that schools offer an ethnic studies course and offer free menstrual products in school bathrooms to include those used by boys. They also, by the way, in the same bill, not to do with education, they renamed Columbus Day to Indigenous Peoples Day. He signed it. Then there's bills, and I won't go into detail, adding felons to the voter rolls, legalizing marijuana recreationally, driver's licenses for illegal citizens. I mean, it goes on and on and on. Listen, I've spent a great deal of time breaking this down, but I hope what you're gathering from me is that I have a real beef with the idea of taking a problem employee and passing them on. And that's what this guy is. He's the problem employee. And the people from Minnesota are telling us, be aware. We don't want you to be blindsided. If you bring him into office, he's doing this stuff again. And the one that really gets me, well, you know what? They all get me. I didn't even go through all of them. I didn't talk about his military service again. I spent a lot of time on that the other day. I got a whole stack of stuff here. I didn't go through all of it. You mean there's more? Yeah, there's more. But here's the thing. We as citizens of the broader nation need to recognize that when someone sends us somebody from their state, we need to look and see what the people of that state have to say. And the people of that state have a lot to say about Tim Walz. And if you're hearing this right now, you got, and I know this audience, you guys aren't voting for Tim Walz. I know that. The vast majority of you, except a few of you who, you know, listen in just to find out what we're saying. The truth be told, there's a lot of you out there, though, who have friends and family members who it's hard to sit down at the Thanksgiving table with because they always want to talk about politics and they're so anti-Trump they can't stand it. And they need to understand, this is about policy. This is about knowing for a fact the kind of things that a Harris-Waltz White House would do. Why? Because we can see what the guy's done in other places. Why would you expect it to be any different? It's the definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over again, right? Expecting a different result? Well, unless he has some kind of a complete, you know, renovation in his deep core, we're not going to see anything different. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, making common sense like a superpower. Y'all are some texting machines right now. Let me just, good Lord. Let me take some of this content and see what you all got. Jeff from Indiana says, come on, Phil. Everybody knows Kamala has changed all her stances on just about everything, so why can't her choice for vice president do the same, at least until after the election? That's, you know, yeah. Barry from Athens says, just curious, what kind of guys did Walz have on his, okay, I don't know. I don't know the answer to your question, Barry. It's going down a road that I'm not sure I want to be on until I've confirmed that that's real. Because right now, internet rumors, I'm just going with news stories. So let's see where that goes. Pete from Decatur, talking about Tim Walz. He was too big a coward to defend his city. Now you know exactly why he got out just before he was supposed to deploy. Fair. Jerry from Decatur says, was it Truman that said the buck stops here? Sad, today's Democrats are not the same as Grandpa's Democrats. They don't know how to solve problems. They are the problem, airborne. Thank you, Jerry. Appreciate you. Alan from AREB says, it's like you have a bad employee you work with and he's getting promoted instead of getting fired. Yeah, literally, just failing up. That's what we're seeing. In fact, the place where you can fail up on a regular basis in the world is government. There's like, you know, I mean, you add in tenure and it really gets crazy. Chris from Madison says, hey, Phil, appreciate your content as always. I would love to hear more about what you think of the role of vice president, not just in the sense of replacing the president if something were to happen. Yeah, so, okay, great point. Number one, truthfully, in order to be able to take over at a moment's notice, first of all, the vice president has to be in the loop on everything. The vice president needs to be able to receive the daily briefing from the CIA and the National Security Council. The vice president needs to be able to agree with and be able to support all policies being put out by the administration so that in the event there's a turnover, they can jump right in. The vice president also needs to have meaningful roles that put them in a position of authority and leadership so that they are training for the day that they may actually take over. And I don't mean that like, here's a gimme job for you. I mean, like, for instance, what Biden did by appointing Kamala Harris as the border czar and as the artificial intelligence czar, that's okay. Given them, now, the fact that she didn't do either one is very interesting. But appointing her to positions of authority to chair certain matters is a big deal. The other piece of this is, don't forget, the vice president plays a huge role in breaking tiebreakers in the Senate, which right now, with the minimal amount of very small level of minority versus majority that we have in the U.S. Senate, it's very likely that the vice president will continue to break tiebreakers, much like we've already seen. When the infrastructure, what do they call it? The infrastructure bill? No, it was the Inflation Reduction Act. When the $1 trillion Inflation Reduction Act finally passed, it was Kamala Harris that was the tie-breaking vote to get it to pass. The vice president also presides over the Senate during key functions, and then the vice president also is an emissary on behalf of the administration when the president can't be there or chooses not to be there. In other words, representing the U.S. to foreign countries. There's a reason why, too, by the way, there's a reason why some of these foreign countries were soliciting Hunter Biden, because they recognized that while it may be the vice president, that Joe Biden still had influence back when he was the VP. And then again, you've also got the thing we just talked about, taking over the role as needed. Jim from Grove Oaks says, "Hey, Colonel, laying it down like a two-lane blacktop, keep spreading the word." Thanks, Jim. Appreciate that. Jim from Huntsville says, "Hey, Phil, the sad reality is Democrats don't care about Kamala's policies. All they care about is keeping Donald Trump out of the White House." You heard Kareem call and say that the other day. "They are willing to let the country burn to the ground if it means keeping Donald Trump from the presidency." You know what's interesting is Nancy Pelosi just admitted that the other day. Navy Phil from Athens says, "When it comes to leadership, she fails. As an attorney general, she expected her staff to stand and call her general. As vice president, she's had a 94% staff turnover rate." Doesn't that say something? You know, that's a great point. That's a true metric. 94% staff turnover. There's nobody who wants to keep on with her. Jenny from Decatur says, "If you don't do what Walt's orders, he'll have you shot with paintballs." That's another thing that happened, too. I just saw that. This morning, there's a video that went viral, and it's then been taken down, but people grabbed it and kept it, of police officers in Minneapolis during the COVID lockdowns walking the streets, yelling at people to get back in their houses, and then shooting them with paintball guns. And in fact, there's one, you're screaming at them, "Get back in the house." All they're doing is standing on their front porch. They're not near anybody. "Get back in the house." And then somebody yelled, "Light them up." And the paintballs went flying. Now, paintballs are non-lethal, but that is an absolute level of harassment that should not have existed. And that was under Tim Walz's watch. Okay, we're going to jump on to national insecurity when we get back from this. We've got, there's a few issues going on around the world, in case you hadn't noticed. And right now, one of the things we're watching, and I got to scan the news when I get back, when I get during this break here, we've got situations happening around the world, not the least of which is the fact that we have got Israel sitting on a razor's edge right now. Iran saying it has no intention to mitigate its efforts against lashing out at Israel. And this today we're finding out that the National Security Council is very concerned about where we are. General Jack Keane recently spoke just today and is laying it on pretty thick about U.S. assets being deployed to the Middle East. Troops in harm's way, national insecurity. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back.